لك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم
In the name of Allah The All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah, and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
Welcome once again, dear listeners. Let's take a look at what's coming up your way in the next hour. We begin with the latest news. Stay informed with the top headlines and major developments from across the globe. Following the news, immerse yourself in the ocean of dua with Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi. This reflective program explores the rich spiritual traditions of Islamic supplications and ziyarat, drawing from revered collections such as Mafatih al-Jinan. Each episode features insightful commentary on selected prayers, including Dua-i Kumail, Munajat Shabaniyah, Dua Abu Hamza Somali, Ziyarat Ashura, shedding light on the meaning and the spiritual guidance they offer. After that, we return to radio productions for another segment of curated content, spanning a wide range of thoughtful and engaging topics. To close the hour, we turn to insights into the Holy Quran with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi. This program takes listeners to verse by verse through the Quran, offering concise yet profound interpretations that illuminate the divine message and draw out practical lessons for everyday life. Coming up next is news. Please stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hamas says it accepts parts of the ceasefire plan proposed by the US President Donald Trump while asserting that some elements of the proposal require further negotiation, calling them vague and ambiguous. Thousands of protesters hold anti-Israeli rallies across the world to condemn the regime's abduction of dozens of activists on board the global Samud flotilla. And Nicolas Maduro says Venezuelans stand ready to mount an armed resistance against the US aggression in the region. Live from Tehran, I am Bahman Nouri, and this is News. Hamas says it accepts parts of the ceasefire plan proposed by the US President Donald Trump, while asserting that some elements of the proposal require further negotiation, calling them vague and ambiguous. The Palestinian Resistance Movement says it is ready to release all Israeli captives, dead or alive, in line with Trump's 20-point plan. Hamas also says it is ready to immediately enter talks to discuss the details of an exchange of prisoners. However, the group says the issues regarding the future of the Gaza Strip and the rights of the Palestinians are being discussed. Hamas has proposed that the administration of Gaza be transferred to a Palestinian technocratic body established through national consensus. In reaction, Trump has told Israel to immediately stop bombing Gaza. He says he believes Hamas is ready for lasting peace. Political analyst John Bosnich earlier told us that Palestinians need to hold Donald Trump accountable for his vague assurances regarding peace.
I don't trust the United States and their guarantees as far as I could throw them. So I strongly would suggest that the Palestinian people would have to nail down Trump to make sure that he agrees to terms that he can be held to and that can be delivered to the Palestinian people. That's the first point. Number two, the involvement of Tony Blair, who George Galloway just talked about receiving a $300 million donation recently, is a totally non-trustworthy partner for the Palestinian people. In fact, Tony Blair is merely working as an asset of the United States as a part of the Anglo-American empire. And I think the involvement of Tony Blair is another very negative sign. So all indications are negative. And finally, I've had a chance to look through Donald Trump's 20 points for a peace deal, one of the points is that America may consider statehood for Palestine. May consider. I can tell you that if you don't lock it down more tightly than that, the Israel lobby is just going to destroy that point on day one.
Reactions are pouring in after Hamas announced its partial agreement to the U.S. proposed truce plan for Gaza. The United Nations chief Antonio Guterres urged all parties involved to seize the opportunity to bring the tragic Gaza onslaught to an end. Mediators in Qatar also welcomed Hamas's statement, saying they are working with Egypt and the US to advance discussions that could pave the way for an end to the devastating Israeli war. Separately, Egypt hailed the statement as a positive development and an opportunity to seize. Meanwhile, German and British leaders said the statement brings peace within reach, with the UK calling on all sides to implement the agreement. Gaza continues to be pounded by Israeli airstrikes and artillery shelling, despite Trump's call for an immediate end to bombardments after Hamas responded to his ceasefire proposal. Gaza City and some other areas of the besieged strip endured a very violent night and saw dozens of airstrikes and artillery shelling. Reports also say two children lost their lives in an attack on a tent in the Al-Mawasi area in south of Gaza. The victims are the first confirmed casualties since Trump demanded Israel halts its attacks. The death toll from the genocidal war on Gaza stands at nearly 66,300, with more than 169,000 others injured. People worldwide continue to hold rallies condemning Israel's military raids on the Gaza-bound Samud flotilla. Protesters are calling for the severance of ties with the Israeli regime.
The have committed no crime. In fact, Israel is the one who has committed all the crimes, the international war crimes, maritime crime, and other human rights crimes. So Israel is the terrorist state. And that Israel embassy across the road from here should be shut down immediately by the South African government.
There's absolutely no reason for the Israeli embassy to still be in South Africa. As a country who has suffered their own apartheid, I don't understand why we are still having interactions with Israel and another apartheid state, why we are still selling our coal to Israel, but we cannot supply our own coal. Why we still have any interactions with them at all, it makes no sense. It's a double standard. There's a lot of hypocrisy here.
These individuals who have sacrificed themselves as volunteers to help to contribute, but who have been abducted. What we are saying is that it's not just an abduction of individuals, but it's a perpetration of a crime committed against humanity.
Protesters outside the Israeli embassy in South Africa demanded the release of Samut Flotilla activists abducted by Israeli forces. Demonstrations were also held in Mexico, Colombia, Pakistan, Malaysia, and Brazil. Protesters also called for an immediate end to the Gaza genocide and blockade. They carried signs and flags calling for the liberation of Palestine and denouncing Israel as an apartheid regime. The global Samut Flotilla, carrying over 500 activists from around the globe, was intercepted by the Israeli Navy as it sailed towards Gaza in an effort to break the siege on the territory.
Students, unions and solidarity platforms are demonstrating in Malaga, demanding the immediate release of volunteers abducted from the Samut Flotilla. They call for an end to Israel's illegal blockade on Gaza and say every act of repression only strengthens their resolve to stand in solidarity with Palestine and fight for justice.
Here in Malaga, we denounce the abduction of the humanitarian flotilla to Gaza, carrying baby formula, medicines, and hope to the people that Israel has condemned to hunger. We demand the whereabouts of our Malaga comrades Manolo and Rafael, unjustly treated as terrorists, and call on our government to cut ties with a genocidal regime that brings only death and destruction.
Rights groups say intercepting civilian vessels in international waters is piracy and violates international law. Hundreds of volunteers from over 40 countries were taken, denied legal counsel, and remain incommunicado. Activists say this campaign aims to intimidate anyone delivering aid to Gaza, highlighting the urgent need for global solidarity.
The Israeli regime, terrorist and genocidal, now acts as a pirate, kidnapping activists in international waters while world governments stay silent. It kills women and children, attacks neighbors, and faces no sanctions. It's a disgrace that our governments allow their citizens to be treated as terrorists by a criminal regime.
In Malaga, demonstrators stress that the flotilla struggle is the struggle of all who oppose oppression. Protesters demand the immediate release of abducted volunteers and called on world leaders to hold Israel accountable. Every chant and banner sends a clear message. Solidarity with Palestine cannot be silenced.
From the socialist movement, we condemn the Israeli regime's attack on the humanitarian flotilla and denounce our government's complicity. Spanish activists were abducted in international waters while the warship sent to protect them was ordered to retreat. The state criminalizes solidarity with Palestine.
Here in Malaga, people are filling the streets to condemn the Israeli attack on the Gaza aid flotilla in international waters. Student groups, unions and solidarity platforms stand shoulder to shoulder, demanding the immediate release of all detained activists. They also declaring their unwavering support for the Palestinian people and their struggle for freedom and dignity. Tonight's protest is part of a nationwide cry of resistance. Alberto Garcia, Malaga.
At Parirwasi, pro-Palestinian associations and several unions gathered at Terminal 2B to oppose an export of electronic components allegedly bound for Israel's military industry. Dozens of protesters turned up despite the late hour. Organizers say the shipment contains logistical components used in armaments and demand that the French state stop authorizing such exports. Several groups also announced they have sent legal notices to the government, accusing it of complicity while civilians in Gaza continue to die.
I am here because there is a plane transporting logistical components for Israeli weapons. We are here to stop this from continuing. It makes no sense to recognize Palestine if at the same time you keep supplying Israel and perpetuating genocide. The tries we are here to try and block them. We will come back as many times as it takes. We will block the airport.
Authorities monitored the site, while organizers insisted their actions remain nonviolent, but determined. The late hour timing was chosen to disrupt loading operations. Protesters say they will return and escalate civil disobedience until export approvals are halted.
These are human beings in front of us. In Gaza, they are human beings. Mothers, children, babies. How can we keep sending weapons? I just don't understand. That's what hurts me. That's what touches me. I don't want to see more horrific images from Gaza.
Protesters gathered at Ruasi CDG to symbolically and practically oppose military supply chains. With legal notices filed and promises of renewed blockades, activists warn the government that pressure will continue until France stops authorizing shipments linked to the Israeli war effort. Qasem Hassan, Paris.
In Germany, mass demonstrations against the government's complicity in the Israeli genocide in Gaza and the war in Ukraine were held in Berlin and Stuttgart. The Friday marches passed off peacefully, but 80 pro-Palestinian protesters were arrested the night before by the police. Our correspondent Dieter Reinisch reports from the demonstration in Berlin.
It's becoming an annual tradition for the German anti-war movement. Every year on October the 3rd, Germany's national holiday, tens of thousands marched through the German capital Berlin to demand never again war. This year, a second parallel demonstration protesting the German support for Israel and the war in Ukraine was held in Stuttgart.
NATO is preparing for war against Russia. The danger of World War III is real. Our politicians have long since made us a party to the war, a war we don't want, but for which our children are expected to die.
Speakers focus on the continued arms trade of Germany with Israel, although Chancellor Friedrich Merz had falsely announced a stop to arms trade on August the 8th. However, new export licenses were granted on September the 22nd and 29th. Polls show that 80% of the population opposes arms exports to Israel.
In recent years, governments have dramatically increased arms exports. A large portion of these weapons go to Israel, where they are used against the civilian population. German weapons are also used. Shame on this army. Those responsible for this are sitting here in the German parliament in Berlin.
A poll released by the national broadcaster ARD showed that only 20% of Germans are satisfied with the government's performance. Cracks are also opening between the two coalition partners, the Conservatives and the Social Democrats, as evidenced by the appearance of a Social Democratic speaker. Many in the Social Democrats don't support the Chancellor's foreign policy.
I don't want American medium-range missiles on German soil. But we have to do something to prevent that. We have to strengthen international organizations to create a space for negotiations and dialogue. There is nothing more honorable than taking to the streets for peace. We hear that we have to prepare for war. No, we have to become capable of peace, not capable of war.
Tens of thousands of people in Berlin and Stuttgart. It was already the second mass demonstration in the German capital in 7 days. The peace movement is alive while the German government steadily drops in polls. Many believe that the peace movement will outlive the current government. Dieter Reinisch, Berlin.
The Venezuelan president has described the recent U.S. military actions in the region as armed aggression aimed at bringing about regime change and plundering the country's natural resources.
The people of the United States are well aware that what is being attempted against Venezuela is armed aggression to impose regime change, to impose puppet governments, and to steal its oil, gas, gold, and all its natural resources. Venezuela has the right to peace, to sovereignty, to its existence, and no empire in this world will take that away from the country.
Maduro warned that if necessary, Venezuelan people are prepared to shift from nonviolent resistance to armed struggle in their pursuit of peace. Maduro's remarks came after the U.S. president authorized another military strike on a vessel off of Venezuela's coast, killing 4 people and accused of drug trafficking. Tensions between Caracas and Washington have been on the rise since August. That is when the U.S. deployed warships, submarines, missiles, and aircraft in Caribbean waters near Venezuela. While Washington claims its military operation targets narcotics smuggling, Venezuela sees it as a direct threat to its national sovereignty. Just days before the second anniversary of October the 7th, hundreds of thousands of Yemenis took to the streets across the country again in a powerful show of solidarity with Gaza. Our correspondent Yusuf Mowry reports from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a.
Yemenis have once again held nationwide rallies in support of Gaza, slamming U.S. President's peace plan. They urged Palestinians to resist at all costs. They stressed that laying down arms will only aid Israel's ultimate plan of occupation.
We came out today to say we reject Trump's latest scheme. He offered this agreement because they have failed to achieve their goals for 2 years through genocide and bloodshed. Despite that, the people of Palestine are still standing, and surely you will never be able to take Gaza.
Yemenis described resistance as the only way to achieve victory over the Israeli regime.
I tell my brothers in Gaza, remain patient and steadfast. Allah is with you. We, the Yemeni people, are with you, and we will never abandon you no matter how much we sacrifice.
Yemenis said they are prepared to counter all U.S. and Israeli plots in the region, including by military means. For Yemenis, the battle must continue until all of Palestine is liberated and until the Mosque of Al-Aqsa is restored to the Muslim world.
The protesters here deem Trump's proposed peace plan for Gaza as a betrayal to the Palestinian cause. They say the Muslim world should reject such a plan in order to free Palestine. Yusuf Mowry, Sana'a.
And that is a wrap for this hour's news bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us.
Can we not see how the planets look like diamonds in the sky? And everything on earth was created for you and I. Can we not see man is merely waiting for the final day to arrive? To arrive. Do we feel a deeper meaning to it all? And in our creation, there are no flaws, and we're trying to control something we can't explain. Or we wander around blindly in the dark without an aim. Do we think it's all a game? Smiling at your fellow man, or looking up at the velvet sky. And sometimes it makes me wonder why we're all still here. Do we feel a deeper meaning to it all? all a game? Do we think it's all a game? Do we think it's all a game? Do we think it's all a game?
Ocean of Dua.
ثم إني أسألك الهدى والتقى والعفاف والغنى.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear listeners, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Rarsi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of The Ocean of Dua. In this version of the program, inshallah, we will discuss the true meaning of prayer and dua, the value of prayer, ways of reaching the Almighty Allah, acceptance and also benefits of dua. So stay with us. So, dear listeners, previously we talked about the value of prayer. And since prayer implies the turning and iqbal of a servant toward Allah, then turning toward Allah constitutes the essence of worship. And it was this state of turning which is the constituent of prayer and making it valuable. That being said, we can move on to the ways that the Holy Quran has depicted for reaching Allah. Supplication is among the most important ways ordained by Allah for His servants in order for them to arrive at Him and to get closer to the Almighty Allah. And apart from this, Allah the Exalted has stated in the Quran four ways of arrival at Him and getting closer to Him. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said, "There are four things in favor of man and not against him: faith, iman, and thankfulness or shukr. For Allah the Exalted says, 'Why should Allah punish you if you give thanks and be faithful?' Seeking forgiveness, as He the Exalted says, 'But Allah will not punish them while you are in their midst, nor will Allah punish them while they plead for forgiveness.' And the last one is prayer or dua. For He, the Exalted, says, 'Say, my Lord would not care for you were it not for your supplication.'" So these four things are mentioned in the Holy Quran as the ways of arriving at the Almighty Allah. First, iman or faith, thankfulness or shukr, seeking forgiveness or istighfar, and the last one, the prayer or dua.
Alhamdulillah, khaliq al-khalq, basit al-rizq, faliq al-asbah, dhil jalal wal-ikram, wal-fadl wal-in'am, alladhi ba'uda fala yura, wa qaruba fashahida an-najwa.
Also, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said, "Whosoever is given three things shall not be deprived of the other three. Whoever is given prayer shall also be given the response or ijaba. Whoever is endowed with thankfulness or shukr shall also be endowed with enhancement or ziyada. And whosoever is granted reliance on the Almighty Allah, or what we call tawakkul, shall also be granted sufficiency or kifaya. That is because the Almighty Allah says in His book, and whoever puts his trust in Allah, He will suffice him. وَمَنْ يَتَوَكَّلَ عَلَى اللَّهِ فَهُوَ حَسْبُهُ. And then he says, if you are grateful, I will surely enhance you in blessing. And he says, call me and I will answer you. Udu'uni astajib lakum. This is what Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said. Also, it is reported from this very holy imam that there are three things with which nothing can cause harm to a person. Prayer during hardships, seeking forgiveness after committing a sin, and the last one, thankfulness when one is given a blessing. So, as you can clearly see, dear listeners, these things mentioned in here are somehow a channel of communication with Allah. Nonetheless, the channels of communication with Allah are many, such as repentance, fear and awe of the Almighty Allah, love and yearning for Allah, and hope in Allah. But man's relation with Allah must be structured on a well-arranged collection of these elements. And the Islamic school tells us that it doesn't approve the theory of being only on a single way of communication with the Almighty Allah. But prayer is one of those significant means of communication with Allah, and it is a way of turning towards Him and getting closer to Him.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo keshti ab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you.
So true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
And you want to know the reason? This is because nothing inspires people to take resort to Allah and to rely on Him the way their neediness and indigence prompt them to do so. And that is why dua, or prayer, is among the widest of the doors of communication with the Almighty Allah. In his supplication at dawn, Imam Zayn al-Abidin alayhi salam says, all praise is due to Allah, whom I call for my need whenever I wish, and confide to Him my secrets whenever I will without a mediator, and He fulfills my needs. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. In the next program, inshallah, we will move on to the essence of worship. Thank you. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
For thousands of years, Iran has withstood invasions, occupations, and coups. From the fall of the Achaemenids to the Alexander, from Mongol devastations to Ottoman wars, from foreign interventions in the 20th century to the coup of 1953, the collective memory of the Iranian people carries one unshakable lesson. The so-called regime change imposed from outside never brings peace, but only chaos and humiliation. And yet, across the decades, powers have dreamed of engineering Iran's collapse. None have pursued this dream more fervently than Israel, with Washington often echoing its ambitions. In June 2025, this dream was tested in fire as Israel launched its largest assault ever on the Islamic Republic, a 12-day war to bring Tehran to its knees.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
When Donald Trump returned to power in Washington in January 2025, Israeli strategists convinced the new administration of three illusions: that Hezbollah's setbacks meant Iran was weak, that economic pressure might drive Tehran toward building nuclear weapons, and that the Islamic Republic was on the verge of collapse. These ideas planted by Tel Aviv's security establishment set the stage for reckless adventurism. On June 13, 2025, Israel struck Iran with fighter jets and drone attacks, later joined by U.S. bombers. Tel Aviv's plan was simple: cripple Iran's defenses, ignite domestic unrest, and open the path to the so-called regime change. But the plan backfired almost instantly. Instead of collapsing, Iran responded with unprecedented force. Hundreds of missiles and drones pierced Israeli defenses, shaking the very psychological foundations of a society long told it was safe under the Iron Dome. Strategic facilities were hit, cities emptied, and for the first time in decades, Israelis fled the occupied territories in significant numbers. Inside Iran, something unexpected happened. Analysts in Tel Aviv had predicted that the country's social rifts and economic grievances would explode once war began. They believed protests would paralyze Tehran's ability to respond. Instead, the opposite occurred. Across divides of politics, class, and ideology, Iranians rallied under one flag. Even critics of the government condemned the aggression. This was the rally around the flag effect that Israeli war planners had ignored. Yet, this unity was not born in a vacuum. It was rooted in the collective memory of humiliation and betrayal. The Anglo-Soviet invasion of World War II, the CIA MI6 coup of 1953, and the Iran-Iraq War, when the entire West armed Saddam Hussein. Each of these wounds engraved a single warning into the Iranian psyche. Foreign intervention means national survival is at stake. Israel and the U.S. miscalculated not only Iran's unity, but also its military depth. Years of investment in indigenous missiles, air defenses, and naval systems guarding the Strait of Hormuz made Iran a fortress. But the international community should know that the consequences of a hypothetical collapse of Iran's government would be catastrophic. Iraq offers one example. The removal of Saddam Hussein produced 4 million displaced, the rise of Daesh, and years of civil war. Libya's collapse turned North Africa into a haven for extremists and sent waves of refugees into Europe. Syria's war devastated the Levant for more than a decade. Now imagine Iran, 90 million people, vast energy resources, diverse ethnic communities. A violent collapse here would ignite civil war, fuel separatism, and send tens of millions fleeing into Iraq, Turkey, Europe, and beyond. Even U.S. and Israeli officials acknowledged these dangers after the ceasefire. Trump himself admitted that regime change comes with chaos. Yet Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, still clings to the idea that only the destruction of Iran's political system can guarantee his regime's security. The war ended after 12 days. Iran's military infrastructure was damaged, but its capacity to retaliate was proven. Israel's strategic failure was absolute. The regime change dream was shattered, while Iran emerged with greater deterrence. Across the world, even hostile analysts admitted, Iran is not another Syria. It is a sovereign power with resilience deeply rooted in history, geography, and national consciousness.
Joining us now is an expert in West Asia affairs, Dr. Reza Mirabian. It's a pleasure having you with us. Let me start off by asking, well, the objective of so-called regime change in Iran has been a consistent and nearly foundational pillar for the Israeli regime for decades. Could you first walk us through what drives this obsession?
Some time ago, Netanyahu made statements. He said this before, claiming that Israel faces an existential threat from Iran. When an Israeli prime minister says that Israel's very existence depends on the Islamic Republic of Iran, that is a huge admission. He's trying to justify his actions, assassinations, bombings, attacks on Gaza, the killing of Iranian scientists, by saying they're necessary because Israel's existence is at risk. Israel should understand that this perceived existential threat will only grow. If a new balance of power emerges, it will likely favor Iran, and Iran must therefore have credible deterrence against Israel. We were able to create that deterrent in the 12-day war. So, when Israelis voice such statements, they are expressing deep anxiety and a sense of danger. In the past, they said they hadn't removed the threat in that war, and therefore felt existentially insecure, and might take further action to eliminate Iran's threat. but they don't realize a new war would produce very different developments. Many of the old constraints would not apply. By Israel's own admission and by American analyst accounts, a future war could be devastating for Israel and destroy its infrastructure.
And moving on to my next question, well, from your analysis, what role did the U.S. President Donald Trump's return to office play in pushing this dream? Were they betting on direct U.S. military involvement?
In the so-called 12-day war, there was no real ceasefire. They said they didn't want it to continue. We said, if you don't stop, we will strike. And then the war stopped, at least temporarily. If Israel repeats the same course and thinks it can frighten the Islamic Republic, they are mistaken. The deterrent we created in that first 12-day phase was meant to prevent continuation of the war. At first, our actions were largely warning strikes. When the war continued, we took on a more offensive character to make Israel regret further escalation. And that worked, which is why the attacks were halted after 12 days. Had that pause not occurred, the third phase would have been a truly devastating campaign against Israel's infrastructure. We hope neither the Americans nor the Israelis make the miscalculation of thinking another war will deliver what they failed to win initially. Now, it seems they want to obtain by negotiation what they couldn't win on the battlefield. That won't happen. Our terms for any negotiation are clear. Iran's right to enrichment must be recognized. If that's not accepted, there will be no talks. If they come in negotiations in good faith, which I think is unlikely, fine. But if they think another war will force their views, they will make a grave mistake.
That was a very interesting analysis, and you mentioned miscalculations. Well, the Israeli war on Iran was a significant miscalculation. They were expecting a more decisive internal reaction and fracture within Iran, but that didn't happen. What led to this misreading?
Israel has two major problems. First, it repeatedly misjudges situations. Regarding Gaza, they thought a quick operation would finish the matter. Instead, we're now 2 years on, and their campaign has reached a disastrous point. Even Trump realized the situation was bad and urged an end because it is costly for them. Israel's planning and assessments are flawed across the board, on Iran, on Gaza, on Palestine. They believe heavy violence will settle their issues, but the facts show otherwise. It failed in Lebanon, and it will not succeed against the Islamic Republic. They keep repeating these mistakes because they feel an existential threat. If sensible actors, especially the Americans, restrain the forces they've unleashed in the region, they should prevent further destabilization.
Based on your own expertise and analysis, what role does Iran's history when it comes to being victim to foreign intervention and invasion play in its resilience?
Iran has bitter memories of past invasions. Over the past century, Iran was occupied twice during the world wars. And during the Iran-Iraq war, we fought to prevent losing even a single meter of our territory. That history makes us extremely sensitive to any aggression. A big question before this 12-day war was whether the third and fourth generations of the revolution would stand up if another war began. The decisive lesson of this conflict, contrary to many experts' expectations, was that young people and ordinary citizens, even some with grievances with the government, stood up strongly in defense of the country. Predicted internal chaos and attempts to force the so-called regime change did not occur. Interestingly, when the fighting started, many foreign reporters went to the Iran-Turkey border expecting Iranians to flee. But in fact, many Iranians living abroad returned to Iran. This was a striking and instructive phenomenon. We hope both the Americans and the Israel-aligned forces learn their lesson and abandon these adventures.
As you said, the complete opposite took place than what they had planned for. But let me ask you, well, let's assume for a second that the enemies did achieve the goal of destabilizing Iran. What would that mean for the region and for the world?
Israel repeatedly says it wants to create a new Middle East and redraw borders, a point Netanyahu has emphasized many times. But you cannot remake the region without changing Iran, and you cannot change Iran by force. They're stuck in Gaza, Lebanon, and Palestine. They failed to achieve their aims there. Their rhetoric is largely a political and military bluff, not a realistic plan. The Americans, too, have pursued regime change policies toward Iran for decades, from Operation Eagle Claw in 1980 to coups, the Iran-Iraq War, severe sanctions, and now the 12-day campaign, all of it tied to regime change designs. The strikes on nuclear sites were presented as targeting the program, but the larger project was regime change. Eliminate leaders, foment internal turmoil, and create chaos, not merely to stop enrichment. Even the Americans and Israelis have sometimes admitted this.
After the war, the 12-day attack on our cities, I felt deep anger. I felt we had to avenge the martyrs, avenge commanders like Commander Hajizada, Commander Salami, Commander Bagheri as they were assassinated. The Zionist regime attacked our country. There had to be retribution. When this war happened, many of us young people felt we wanted to do something for our country. We didn't want to be indifferent.
I felt terrible. Why would they attack us when we did nothing to them? We never invaded the Israeli regime or other countries. But they have caused insecurity here many times. It hurts an Iranian's heart, but I'm glad we answered them back. I felt Iran would always win. No matter the threats, Israeli bombs or American pressure, they can't affect us. We grow stronger. If Israel aimed to destroy our country or political system, our roots run deeper than theirs. A rooted tree can't be destroyed. Maybe they'll cut some leaves, but it will grow back stronger. No country fights for the welfare of another country's people. They act for their own interests. Claims that they care about people are lies, especially America and Israel toward the Iranian people. They are the Iranian people's enemies.
They want to give us freedom, but we already live freely. Their goals are their own. They don't care about our people.
My country is always oppressed. It doesn't invade others. But the arrogant powers, like wolves and jackals, want to attack. They don't know Iranian men are brave, and if men aren't there, Iranian women are. Someone needs to make them understand that. Their attacks and sanctions weren't for our benefit. They imposed sanctions, caused hardship, and disturbed our society because it served their interests, not ours.
Regime change is a foolish idea. It's impossible. The Islamic Republic will remain strong and powerful.
This 12-day war showed the world that Islam and Iran endure. Nothing can separate or destroy this faith and these people.
Their slogans didn't achieve their goals. Our people were wiser. Instead of joining their agenda, Iranians became more united. Thank God, the opposite happened.
اتفاق نیفتاد خدا رو شکر و حتی این اتفاق معکوسش هم افتاد و مردم متحدتر هم شدن.
پیام من به تمام مردم جهان.
My message to the world: Iran always wins, whether in a 12-day war or a 12-year one. Iran will be victorious.
ایران برنده است و همیشه پیروزه.
پیام ما اینه که ما مسلمانیم.
Our message: We are Muslims and trust in God. We've paid with many martyrs and stood firm. No one is afraid. With God's help, we will prevail and stand to the end. The world should know Iranians are resilient and patient.
به نظر من با این جنگ 12 روزه
This 12-day war showed the world. Iranians mean what they say, no empty boasts. They saw our missile strength and deep roots. We don't back down to outsiders.
You know, the thing is, some analysts say that the Israeli regime's strategy is self-isolating and in many ways self-weakening by provoking direct confrontation that actually showcased Iran's...
Right now, Israel is closer to destruction than many acknowledge. Numerous Israeli officials and public figures have said this bluntly. Even Netanyahu has warned that the regime's lifespan may not reach 80 years. Some Israeli commentators credit Netanyahu with provoking international backlash. For example, mobilizing European governments to call for an independent Palestinian state. Inside Israel, there is reverse migration, economic collapse, mounting international pressure, and even the erosion of once powerful lobbying networks in the U.S., which, according to Trump's own words, have been weakened. Based on their own beliefs and the political security data, I assess that this regime's long-term survival is far from guaranteed.
Israel waged against Iran was not just a military clash. It was a collision between illusion and reality, between the dream of regime change and the endurance of a nation. But this is only the beginning of our story. In the next episode, we will uncover how Israel's war of choice reshaped the balance of power in West Asia and why the global order can never return to what it was before June 13th.
To all of mankind, this was his call.
mountains of Mecca, how did you move on the day that the beloved returned to his Lord? And up to the last breath escaped from his lips, he prayed that his ummah would find success. Oh, mountains of Mecca, how will it feel when the earth shall quake and tremble with fear, and we shall be gathered together to stand in the court of Allah with our deeds at hand. Oh, how we pray that on that day we'll be with those to whom Allah will say, peace be with you, I am pleased with you. Oh, mountains of Mecca, bear witness that I to the oneness of Allah do I testify. For all that he's given me, how can I deny? My purpose in life should be only to cry, La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. There is no God but Allah, Muhammad is his messenger. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad Rasulillah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad Nabi Allah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad Rasulillah.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, as you were with us, we are discussing the 62nd verse of this chapter. Now let's listen to this verse.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
أَمَّنْ يُجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ إِذَا دَعَاهُ وَيَكْشِفُ السُّوءَ وَيَجْعَلُكُمْ خُلَفَاءَ الْأَرْضِ أَإِلَهٌ مَّعَ اللَّهِ قَلِيلًا مَّا تَذَكَّرُونَ. تَذَكَّرُونَ
Is he not best who responds to the desperate one when he calls upon him and removes evil and makes you inheritors of the earth? Is there a deity with Allah? Little do you remember.
So, as we discussed earlier on, this verse, this holy verse, implies that not only the Almighty Allah solves the problems and difficulties of the ones who are distressed, and also care to supplicate to him, but also he makes them successors in the earth. أَمَّنْ يُجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ إِذَا دَعَاهُ وَيَكْشِفُ السُّوءُ وَيَجْعَلُكُمْ خُلَفَاءَ الْأَرْضِ He makes you successors in the earth. So, as we said, supplicating to the presence of Allah and asking him for removing our difficulties, especially at the time of distress, is necessary for everybody to live on. And whenever our calls, our invocations are not answered, there is actually a reason for it. For example, our supplication, our invocation had not been for a good deed, but we considered it. We conceived it as something good, yet it was not. Or